Even though the main focus is in the Rocky Mountain and the Rocky Mountain region, and they use the Rocky Mountain context to help frame climate change and other science and sustainability issues, the students are from all over the place, and I think it's got potential as a model for other parts of the world in terms of particularly engaging young people and giving them the background and tools they need to, you know, become leaders in their own communities.
Great. Are there any other announcements?
Hi, this is Gary Brosh.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just want to say hi to everybody, and just a reminder, I've been doing a lot of work on climate change effects in the world, especially in the Pacific and out here in the West, and I've got a lot of new material up on my website, worldviewofglobalwarming.org, and I've just had some of my pictures picked up by Living on Earth. You know, it's a radio program. They have a website with photos. So I'm just looking for more collaborations and ways to get this pictures out and to help everybody do their climate literacy work and climate education. So thanks to everybody. Also wanted to thank Jim Callahan, who's going to be speaking later, I believe. He's been a great supporter of my work and Lynn Cherry's work in our book for kids, and I really thank him for connecting up so strongly with the educational community mm-hmm. about climate material.
Great. So, Gary, why don't you send an email out to the listserv reminding people of the URLs for where your material is. It'll make it a little bit easier for everybody to go take a look.
I will do that. I was about to do that. I thought I would come on the call today and make and say hello to
No, that's great.
Too, but I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone.
Good. The other thing that everybody should know is that we do have a Facebook page that we started posting to regularly a few weeks ago, and so we invite everybody. It's the Climate Literacy and Energy Awareness Network page, and I've announced these calls the past few weeks on it, so invite everybody to go there and to like the page.
Tamara?
Anybody else? Yeah?
Yep, this is Caroline. I got bumped off when Mark was speaking. Mark, was Jillian Bowser part of that team, that RCNUS?
Indeed she was. Yes, she is one of the key movers and shakers of the Rocky Mountain Science and Sustainability Network.
Right. I just came from a Costa Rican OTS RCN.
Oh.
We had a 4-day incredible immersion on education and communication.
Right.
And
good.
She and I connected. I was actually helping her find a replacement for one of those students. And I fully agree with you. That's a model that truly, if NSF likes funding that and will fund it, it really gets these diverse populations of students at the cutting edge of their careers really immersed in some excellent ways. So I'm happy to hear that you witnessed that firsthand.
Who was the person that you know that was part of that, Caroline?
Jillian Bowser. And she's a PhD. She teaches at Colorado State University. I have her contact information, but she's busy, but she should be a part of this. She really gets it.
Mm-hmm.
She's a strong advocate for broader impacts in the best sense of the word, you know. So.
Okay, great.
Right, and she was a park ranger for 15 or 20 years, I think, up in the Yellowstone region.
Okay, great. Any other announcements? Okay, before we get started, I just wanted to acknowledge that we had talked about having a conversation about the activities of the Climate Literacy Network, and we will, since we have this presentation this week, we will postpone that conversation to next week, but we will have it. So now I'd like to introduce Jim Callahan. He is the founder of climatechangeeducation.org and the editor of a number of its family of web portals, and he's going to talk to us about, among cleannet.org's many friends, mobile climate science labs and the International Climate Education Portal. And his slides are available on our website and the links to the websites he wants to show us. So with that, Jim, I'll let you take over.
Great. Hello, everybody. I think I've last seen some of you at the March conference at NSTA. It's always a pleasure to meet up with folks at the conferences.
Jim, can you speak up? We can't hear you.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it. So hello, everybody, and looking forward to seeing you guys at conferences and reconnecting to physical as well. But, of course, teleconferences is the best way in general. I'm so honored to be invited to speak here today on two of our programs. For some of you, this is an overview for a first time, and others, it will be more of an update of some of the things we're up to. Let's see. So staying with the style I've heard in the other conferences is that I'm going to call out different slides. So this is really just moving to slide two here. What we're seeing here are links that are the web version of what it is that we're discussing. Okay. I'd like to cover a couple general format issues, just matters to start with. Let's see. One is that since I'm being asked to present on two different subjects, we kind of talked ahead of time over the best way to go about this, and I'm going to lean toward this one, and hopefully everyone's okay with it, that we'll cover the first one, the Mobile Climate Science Labs, and take questions to that and then go to the second one. We could do the style of covering each and doing questions, but so we're going to cover the Mobile Climate Science Labs, then go ahead for the questions, and then I'll go into the International Climate Report, if that's okay with folks. The second one is regarding just a little bit of the nature of the PowerPoint slides and the relation to the voice presentation. There will be three types of slides: text, photos, and then screenshots of web pages that are relevant to the presentation. Now, what I will do, though, is typically note groups of slides. For instance, I would say we're now covering slides 3 to 8 or 15 to 19. And the idea is I'm not necessarily going to be locked in sync with a particular slide. It'll be a group of slides that are about something. So feel free, for those of you who are looking at the slideshow, and of course some of you might be looking at the website, that's fine too, to drift in that range. And I'll say when we're kind of moving on, but it's not like you have to be stuck at a certain place, or I'm going to be calling out each individual slide. So I hope that's okay too. All right, so with that in mind, going to go to the next group, or the group 3 to 8, and we'll get a bit of an introduction of what the Mobile Climate Science Labs are. What we do are hands-on science activities, demonstrations, and labs. The characteristic of involving students, this is actual having a chance for the public and the schools to explore basic evidence underlying the larger science that they can touch and do and play and discover and test themselves. This is something we have been doing for the last 10 years. So for many of the group and the precursors of CleanNet, we've been saying hello and checking in at science conferences and science museum events and public agency events and so on. We're fairly well known among a lot of the group. I think you could characterize the people who present are specialists in presenting climate science education through hands-on techniques. So as you can see here with the style, there, as I've been talking, if anyone has been sliding through, you'll see there's a website and some photos that give an idea that's going on. Oh, and let's see. One other one would be that when you see the presentations, we love to present presentations with other organizations, their events, their things, museums and their exhibits. That's where we started. We supplemented complemented what was going on in museums. So we like to segue. We like to connect and be a part of something that's larger, contributing to that. We don't tend to be a program that just stands by itself. We're more adding to what others are doing. So it's very collaborative in nature. Okay. So moving now to slides 19 through 14, to give an idea of where are the kind of places that we present. You'll see more on the webpage screenshot, but it is in K-12 schools. Four conferences, typically science and education, but other kinds of conferences as well. Large public events at colleges and universities for various forms of teacher professional development. Museums and aquariums for government programs and events, and for businesses. They might have their employee teacher training or their events as well. Okay. We're primarily in Northern California and occasionally go outside, but our base is in Northern California. And there we reach on a scale. Our scale is about hundreds of thousands of students in the public. We also work very closely with teachers alongside them, but especially to help them to gain better skills in presenting through hands-on techniques. This includes teachers, student teachers, future teachers, so student aides, and really, really working alongside to encourage them and to help them feel more comfortable in teaching science through hands-on techniques. Okay. So once again, I'm kind of catching up here. If we then move on, well, actually, I'm going to talk, actually have a bit about our themes. So just an idea. I actually pulled that slide up because the website was getting so large. Here's just an idea. Again, the website gives much more fuller idea. Some of the themes, carbon dioxide, the heat trapping effect of greenhouse effect, ocean acidification, how satellites instrumentation works, what are the instruments on satellites, how ocean research vessels do their science, what are the instruments they use so that people can publicly try those and see that, combustion, respiration, how climate modelers do their work, what's that based on, energy, visible light, infrared light, how that works, black body radiation, then, of course, we go into the specific literacy principles of that are outlined in the principles. And then another example would be what's going on in the national parks with climate change. Some of the characteristics we have is it needs to be, of the climate science, that which translates well into hands-on labs and demonstrations. Some areas do translate well. They can be duplicated by the public. They can be done safely and inexpensively on a large scale. Others are just out of reach, or there's some characteristic that just, I'm afraid that is pretty well confined to having to describe through electronic media or a lecture or PowerPoint. It's hard for the public to do it. And then, of course, we are influenced a lot by what public, what our supporters, what our partners, the sporting agencies and things ask us to do. If somebody's working with somebody, we're going to more emphasize that area of science and develop that more. And then finally, we do have to pay a lot of attention to what are the K-12 standards, in our case, particularly in California, but the national standards, so we're not asking the schools to go out and teach something that they're not supposed to teach. We're going right on message to what it is they're supposed to teach. Okay, so let's see. Moving to slides 15 through 19, we're going to look a little bit specifically at in the K-12 schools. As I think I was just going into that, there it is. We are as climate science specialists, the topic of the climate literacy principle is what we live and breathe. That's what we teach. That's what we're good at. That's what we do. But we fold that in. We need to work with state content standards. And actually in California, although we have a lot of trouble with the money in our schools, our content standards are regarded as very high in the country. And as the national changes go on, California has historically had some very good science standards, and they are being significantly updated now to specifically call for climate change. For instance, in the fourth and seventh grade, there is specific content that must be covered in the schools on climate change. So actually, the state standards aren't really as bad as sometimes we think about. You can teach a lot of underlying science for climate by working with them. But here's one of the big ones. California in particular stresses that there needs to be hands-on education. 20-25% of hands-on in K-8 is called for to be investigation and experimentation. That is rarely delivered. The schools are hungry for it. The teachers are hungry for it. The principals love it. And that's exactly what we do. We're right on it to bring them the content that they often don't need, but they know that they're required to know, and they know as educators who are trained in education how valuable it is to have a hands-on component to what's going on. So let's see. In terms of academic courses, we are looking. It's largely in the STEM area. That's the courses that we work with: physical, earth, and life sciences. In high school, it's chemistry, physics, and biology. We will do math when asked. There are definitely connections with math, but it's mostly in the STEM fields. And if there's technology courses in the schools, then we're right on for that. And again, the themes align well with the climate literacy principles, and then how they overlap with the school state standards. In California, the state standards specifically have an area of investigation and experimentation, and that's something that's we're right on. How do you learn by experimentation? Okay. Let's see. We do work closely with many different programs, and including some of the overlap with CLEAN is the GCCE, the Global Climate Change Education, the NASA-funded programs. For instance, there's a Life for Climate Education up at Lawrence Hall of Science that we've worked with, and their predecessor, the Global System Science program. So we're a hands-on component. We do a lot of outreach. We do a lot of connection for them. We work well with the program that CLEAN works well with. So we're natural friends, I think, on that. Let's see if we go ahead over here to go over here to slides 20 and 21. This is something kind of among our principles. We have to fold in some of our principles as hands-on educators. Things we call the 10 essentials, and then with two absolutes. There are 10 things that we judge what we do, we guide what we do, we must do, and we work really well with it. Now, we'll bring people along. People are new. We don't expect them to get all this, but they're going to get this. These are the principles, the things we strive for them. But even when they're starting, one and two we have to get. We have to make sure what we're teaching is well-vetted science. It has to be very solid science. Science, look over it, we check it, we are very careful about what we teach scientifically. And then it must be safe. If we do it poorly, not only could we hurt somebody, but we can hurt education in general. It sets a bad tone if somebody ever gets hurt, or even there's a perception of anything getting close to hurt. Safety is very important. I just go quickly. You can see if maybe can I get feedback for a second? How many folks are looking at slides? I mean, I'll try to responding to that. Maybe just.
I am. This is Tamara. I'm looking at the slides.
Okay. Just a voice vote? Yes, looking at slides.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
And no voting. No looking at slides. Good. Okay. So I'm not going to try to hit you all with PowerPoints. I mean, you guys can read faster than I can talk. So, but you can maybe one of the things you can see is extremely important to us to make it fun, engaging, and active. But you have to do all these other ones. It must be good education theory. We're not big on what a lot of hands-on these days are done. We call cake and ice cream science. You know, to make it cool and explosions just for the sake of making it cool. Right, just for the sake of making it fun? No, vetted science is number one. But it also must be artistic. We always have artists on our team. There's other ones where we could explain in questions or something like
that. Sounds like a good...
Mm-hmm. Sorry? Okay. Okay, so let's see. Then we have 20 to 23. This is something that we think is the ultimate in scalability. We don't bring that up to be competitive. We bring that up to say that we want people to take advantage of this. We want other kinds of education to work with us. But from a science education theory perspective and from our experience that we can see, is that firsthand actual involvement is the very best when it's possible. It's just an incredible experience that allows other forms of education. But we also recognize, we don't disagree with when people say that electronic media, broadcasting, the internet, PowerPoint, is the most effective in reaching a larger audience, the largest audience. Now, within that, it is possible through what is transmitted by its largest audience that one of the things that you can put in broadcast is people observing what other people are doing. It's not the best, but it's not bad. And the idea is that hands-on science demonstrations, segments of the public doing hands-on, is also possible to put on it. And I think there's a couple examples of some of the most popular broadcasts that have ever been done in history are actually people doing cool things that other people can't do. When we landed on the moon, they were watching a hands-on demonstration, a feet-down demonstration of them jumping off the thing. We all couldn't do that, but they can see it. People love to see other people experience cool things, right? So that's an exciting thing that is a good complement and supplement to other forms of broadcasting. The other thing is that the scientific evidence that we are working with is evidence that any American can experiment and test in principle if they care to, if they want to. This is not a threat to science professionals or science EPO folks, because this is not saying we don't need the NASA and NOAA research projects. We absolutely need research scientists who do things that we can't do. It's too expensive. It's too complicated. You need training. You need equipment. You need time. You need patience that people don't have. But they still can connect. This is the scalability. This is the demonstrations that people themselves can do. and that's something of its numbers. Now, yet we do respect, we have to understand that although this is scalable, for many it's not desirable. There are arguments that we respect of why putting science in the public's hand, in some people's view, is not a good idea, or it's not worthwhile, it's not a priority. We have to respect that. But we also ask for a little bit of respect that this is a very, very popular and very good way to do things. Okay, so let's see. Going over here to 24 and 26, this is the harder part of my little talk here, but this is one that we do like to say to folks, because we recognize that we are in a society, I'm going to 24 and 26, that we are in a society where things tend to be very competitive. Programs, including in science education, tend to compete with each other and treat each other as, well, the better they do, the worse we're doing, and so on. We ask of CLEAN. What are we asking of CLEAN.net when we're getting this opportunity to address you guys? Please, we ask, you don't need to treat us as competition. We prefer to work as friends. We ask for dialogue, two-way dialogue to learn from each other. We really aren't coming to CLEAN.net.org or expect that it would promote or support what the Mobile Climate Science Labs are doing. You have priorities, you have messages that are from higher up you have to do, and we respect that. But we also ask, and then we ask those other programs, please let's try to avoid a situation where we're brushing each other aside and trying to replace what others are doing when we could do so much better working together. I wanted to give an example of why I think this is a very right thing to do, that I could pose as this is important on behalf of the kids and the teachers that we see in the photos in these slides, or science education, or the American people, or the public. Instead, I ask this out of concern for two institutions that we all love very much, NASA and NOAA. What they're doing are so indispensable for education and climate change. Both agencies has of late begun to include depictions of hands-on science and activities in their websites and professional development. Here's a case where the different outcomes of treating each other as friends can make quite a difference in what's going on. We are asking for the ability to give some active, constructive feedback. We are so glad to see that these are happening in CLEAN programs, that there is now more hands-on that's going on. But we also have to be aware of that some of the material that's going out there is actually deeply flawed. There are several activities that are being widely and prominently promoted that really have some problems, and there's no need for that. We can help, we can work together. We don't want to see that happen. I don't think anybody else wants to see it happen either. There are issues of scalability, there's ethical issues, there's safety issues, but most of all, we're concerned that in these 10 essentials, that there's places where the science is way off base. Now, we don't say that to be haughty. It comes from the level of how much we work on this subject. We try things very carefully. We work very closely with scientists. And we want to continue to help. Now, I'm also not talking online here about some of the details, because we want to handle this kind of like in-house among the science educators. I'm glad to go into it and things a little bit offline, or give you a little bit more. I can give you some examples, but I'm deliberately not. We're not here. We want to clean these things up, but we can only do these in dialogue. If the problems aren't corrected and the concerns are not taken seriously, we're worried about loss of respect for NASA and NOAA. There is the NSTA, there's science teachers, there's even newspaper headlines. If NOAA is knowingly promoting bad science in the schools around climate education, that's a problem none of us will gain with. We want to avoid that, and if a damage to either NASA or NOAA happens, something of that magnitude, it's a blow to all of science education. So it's an example of why we're very eager to make sure there's dialogue and helping. We can all help each other. What you do is so valuable to what we do, because you teach on a scale and on a way and with tools that we don't attempt to duplicate. We are a supplement. We are a part of that. So it's working together that works it. Going to slide 27 and 29, that I think we want to be aware, we have been over the years, that there are arguments of why what we do maybe isn't so desirable. that there's things about it that it's better if it's not around. I would imagine present company accepted we don't get that from you guys, but I think we want to be aware that those arguments do come up from quarters maybe higher up or different sectors in Washington and so on. And it's a matter of just having a response to those that say, you know, this actually is better than that. We hear your lack of desirability things, but actually this isn't such a bad thing. This is good. Number one is that it does complement and enhance what cleaned.org does in the research. It doesn't necessarily have to be you have to support it or do it, so you don't have to go and say, well, we need funding for this. It's already happening. It's already happening, and it's a good thing for us. There are so many positive things from science education and the service of the public. This is coming from the teachers and the students from what we're doing. So it's not that the government has to be coming top down. But one of the big ones is by having educators helping and working on this, we can help keep the noses clean from recommendations about how to teach hands-on, where we can get into some pretty mucky situations, and we want to help do that. So finally on this, the wrapping up is on 30 and 32, is that we're very conscious of building public appreciation and support for what CleanNet.org and the various agencies are doing. That's a very deliberate part of what we're doing. It's part of the way the scientific process in our mind is. We're building a bridge between what the public has experienced, what they take seriously, what they've tested, what they've tried themselves. That helps their understanding and their what they take seriously. And a bridge to what they're hearing from the scientific experts, what authority is saying, this is important for you to know. People can hear things, but whether they really internalize it and believe them, whether they take it seriously, has a lot to do with their actual experience. And it's also a bridge to why, while we can learn things that are fundamental, that are very clear in science, that you can test and see yourself, there is a tremendous need for continual funding for research in climate and energy from the federal government, for federal agencies. There is so much more we do need to know. There's much we know, and there's so much more that needs to still be studied. And one way to put it is a lot of our demonstrations actually can answer the question in a way that people through their experience have a better understanding. What are those satellites doing? How do those buoys work? How do climate modelers figure things out, and how do they validate what they've learned? It's all in that. It does get to the value, how much people take seriously. Is this meaningful science? Is this garbage? Is this real? Why is what this climate scientist coming down with and the agency's doing it? Why should we take that seriously? Why is that real? I've seen what they're talking about. They know it. So that's pretty much what I have on the first section. And I want to check in. So if there's questions before we move into the international.
This is Tamara. The labs and demonstrations that you do, have you created them all, or do you use labs and demonstrations that you find available from elsewhere, too?
Yes. Good. Oh, that's a great question. That's one we don't get asked too much. That's good. Let's see. It's very, very important for us to give credit, to share credit. So we will, where we get ideas and things and we share it, we're gonna point out where we came up with those. Some of them are sort of like public domain. They've been around for so long, some of the ideas, and then we will adapt them to climate change, right? But an awful lot of it, yes, we've developed ourselves with a team of scientists and educators and artists. But it's very, very important for us if we see an idea to give credit to where we got that idea from.
Are there any other questions on this section?
Well, Jim, you mentioned that you're concerned that there's some materials out there that are not high quality or very misleading, and you know, maybe when we wrap up with the international piece, you could talk a little bit more. You don't have to name names, but if there's some specific
Examples
of the type of flaws or misconceptions or bad pedagogy that you've come across, that would be helpful.
Yes, right. And I think we can do it. We can find the right balance, because it also shouldn't be so vague that people have no idea what we're talking about. So, okay. Well, I'll take your cue, Mark, and go with the international and come back to that one. Does that sound right?
Okay.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay. So let's see. Now we're going into 33, and 33 has a link to the international portal. Since we're actually talking about a website, we did provide some screenshots, but of course, by all means, feel free to play and look around. It's a lot more interesting, I think, to go around. Screenshots are pretty dull, and you can't interact with them and so on. You will see in the international portal, by the way, cleannut.org is well represented. Let's see, we are, okay, so I think that what I'll try and do is give a real idea, just an idea if we go through the next slide, 34 through 37, just a feel, a non-interactive feel. 34 is the map, it's a linked map, so you get the idea that we are going to be able to explore what is out there in education around the world. You can go to all the different continents and many of the different countries, and it's a sharing place. It's a place to share what are we all teaching, how can we learn from each other, how can others learn from us, right? So let's see, we have some of the highlights of the United States. Now you'll see the United States is a very rich country in terms of information. It dominates the Internet, right, easily. No other country comes close in having the kind of resources. So we go deeper into cities and regional and other, different sectors of the education. Some parts of these website is well developed, and some we're still developing, or some we especially still need to develop. Or everything is constantly being developed through recommendations coming in, and so on. If we go to 36, we're looking at the examples of how education is in Switzerland. The site is primarily in English, but we try to reference over and link to non-English languages. You also see there's a very important to us is respect and link up with other portals. So typically there might be a portal within a particular country, and we're going to point to that. Now, the criteria, of course, is does it actually teach serious science education? If it does and it's a government portal, then we're going to not try to duplicate or compete with that. We're going to have a hub and have links to this, okay? So we're looking at some Canada. Canada is probably the other richest country in terms of internet resources and programs that are actually going on in K-12. We look at Africa, and the Africa page that we're seeing on 38 is the Africa continent page. Then we can go into actual pages of some of the specific countries that are going on. And that's quite touching. We get great emails from folks in Africa looking for help and sharing things, and a lot of times they would never be found if they weren't on our site, and that's part of sharing that. Let's see. By the way, all of our websites are part of NSDL, so we're at National Science Library. We do like to thank the federal government, which often has and federal government-funded programs, which do come up with great resources, and we're going to point to those. Again, we're not trying to duplicate or compete with those. It's true networking is what we're after. Let's see. I'm going to jump past 39, and let's see. I'm going to go over to 41, but there's an example of the U.S., the national and federal page in for the United States. And then if you don't mind, I'm going to back up a little bit or just move around there at some of the other ones. Is one of the nice things that happens by being able to have this international portal is it works with our rest of our portals, and we encourage this for other portals too, is then you can go in and go to that rich mine, the veins of wonderful material, and find great examples of how people teach well in other countries. So that we're finding some of the best. So, I'm looking at 42. We're beginning to look at what the way in which they do professional development. Or if we go to page 45, we can look at ways in which people teach chemistry in high school in the different countries. I think we're going to see the United States often is a leader. It's doing some wonderful things, but every country excels in different ways. There are ways in which they teach in Europe that are incredible. Or Canada that are incredible, and it's not necessarily well represented on the web, but there's enough that you can get an idea, and we're looking to do that. So we do see cleannet.org as an extremely important part of the international portal. I think there's also a thing that one of a message to Americans. Americans are often we know about ourselves, but we don't often know about the world. The country was founded with people who looked around the world, who learned from Europe, of other countries. The native organizations is where we get the whole idea of federations, and then we innovated. America does best when we treat ourselves as part of the international community, climate change is such an international program, such a national problem, and how we take care of it is such an international, that I think there's so much to learn on that. So I think I'm kind of really pushing the time, so I won't go so much into some of the lessons unless people want. Maybe there's overall things that we can draw from this, but we do want to share, and it's pretty exciting to see how education is taking place around the world. And lastly, this portal, the international section of our site, was specifically developed in early 2009, at which time, it was just great timing, we were contacted by agencies under the Denmark government in preparation for Copenhagen 15 conference, where they were saying, we're looking around and we think there needs to be a portal to help allow teachers to communicate around the world. And they said, looks like you're doing something around this. Would you mind if we did something, or would you want to help? How do you feel about collaborating? He said, that's what we're all about, collaborating, working with folks around the world. And they said, well, could you just do this with us? Could you be this portal and we'll work with you? And that's a lot how this whole section of this website, our portal internationally, developed as being the place for teachers to go. And I will say this is one thing, I think we all should be proud of this. Many folks, most of us would kind of be a little disappointed in how well governments work together during COP15. I think that's a fairly conservative thing to say. It's actually quite exciting how well teachers, science educators came together and have been coming together ever since. I think we're kind of models, and kids are models of how it is possible to collaborate in the interest of each of our countries, in our futures for America, but in a way that protects our planet as well, and in terms of science education. So I think I've spoken enough here, and go over to questions, including not forgetting Mark's question.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Are there any questions for Jim about either the international portal or any other piece?
I'm wondering if you count how many hits go to the different sites.
Yeah, we're not a big pay attention to that. I mean, we are millions of people. We don't always hit that every year, but we are millions of web visitors in that scale, and certainly over the years, many millions. I wish we had more resources to do that. We do pay attention. For instance, there is I'm drifting away from the international portal. There is a lot of teachers are looking for lesson plans. Teachers want to figure out how can they teach. And for instance, if you go to our K-12 sections, you'll see how we've broken it down. What we do is a lot. It is in response to that feedback, that the need to be able to have it teachable in the schools. If you give people full curriculum, it's important that there's curriculum. We link to the curriculum, but teachers are often asking for that. Much of our visitorship is international. We get lots from India, lots from Australia, China. I mean, people come around the world because this is a place to learn what's going on around the world. So, yeah, I'm sorry, that should have been a bit bigger answer. We're very heavily popular internationally.
Great.
So in a way, we're also a face for America, and we want to make sure that's a responsibility to handle that well, to not miss the important programs that are in the United States.
This is Tamara. Do you... Well, I have basically two questions. One is, you talked about going to different venues to do these hands-on. I was kind of curious as to how often you do this, like how many times per month or per year. But then also, is it focused in the United States, or do you do that internationally also?
Yeah, right. as far as often, it's several times a week. Right, we're out there. Weekends we're bigger events. We're going to be conferences. Weekdays we're in the schools. We might be going to a private school or a public school this week, that week. We'll go to a corporate event in the evening. So we're out there as much as our different teams can do things.
And is that funded under particular grants, or how is that funded?
So we're doing okay. That's a bigger question. How we funded is. We work very hard to be diverse so that we're serving many areas, and we're not. And it also has allowed us to keep going. We've been doing this for 10 years. So that's, being dependent on one grant can be kind of risky about going for 10 years. More than 50% comes from teachers, our funding, teachers, informal educators, scientists, engineers, and artists. So basically, it comes from the people who actually are in this doing this. And
basically a registration kind of fee?
No, it's more, I'll give you some of the other things we do, and I'll get a lot how we work. We're interesting how we do things. Then the other areas, colleges and universities, their programs. So again, we work alongside of the programs that might come and have a 3-year grant, and we will work with them for a year or two, and then if their grant funding dries up, well, hopefully they won't, and then we'll keep working. But we work with many different programs. There's museums and science centers. There's there's federal government funding. There's state of California, cities and counties. There's nonprofits. There's corporations, and if people are curious, we do have rules about our money from corporations. We're very careful, and we're full disclosure about that. But it's a very diverse set of funding that we have. But a great deal of our funding is through interesting things that we will. An example: the state of California has had historically the California Climate Change Conference. They're not doing too well financially, but for several years they had Dr. Bachari and Jim Hansen, and it was quite big, a great conference. But their rules were that they were not, although it was called the California Climate Change Conference, the state did not have in the funding that they could have anything about education, nor does there any money for exhibits. Okay, but yet they rent this large exhibit hall. So what we worked out with them is, all right, you have a lot of space, and you aren't allowed to bring this in, at least funded, well, how about we'll arrange with educators to come up and we'll provide exhibits for you. They will get to come up and they won't get charged. And everybody will come up, and so the state wasn't actually writing us a check. The exhibitors weren't writing us a check, but we provided, as they said, a great professional conference full of education. And so it'll often be a lot of, we will often do a lot we'll find the way that people can support each other through different things. But maybe also to tie into another one, internationally, it has been the federal government that has actually sent us internationally. The Department of Defense has asked us to go to Europe to help share through this conferences and with some of the programs there. And what they saw is that if education around climate change is not done well by the United States, it is a national security issue. And what they asked us to do, and our thing is that national security, that's a little bit out of our range of what we can talk about. You're asking us to go to be science educators to do what we do, our door presentation. We're comfortable doing that. We can do that for you. That's just fine. But the idea was, one is, if America is not learning well about climate change, then America will suffer. I mean, it, like the rest of the world, will suffer the physical problems about climate change. But it's also that our country will not be seen very friendly for the rest of the world if we're acting like we don't know about the science and we shouldn't do anything about it. Anyway, the Department of Defense has felt, this is really important what you guys are doing, and we're going to send you to Europe to go do that. So that was an example of that. And so they paid our expenses and had us go over to Europe.
Jim, this is Scott Carley. I noticed on the website that you have a process for recommending resources, which is great. And I'm curious whether you have some kind of review process, or is it basically self-nominated? If folks send you a recommended resource, you basically put it in whatever category they suggest. Or is it actually a process that you have to review that?
It's a process, but I think it's not a. I'll describe for you how the process.
Please.
If we're looking at a resource that's going to go in a very prominent, important place, where it's going to be, this is a very important piece of curriculum, for instance, or this is a great way to teach mathematics. This has to go through a process. We have to farm that out, a recommendation to a team. We're going to send it to some scientists. We're going to send it to some educators. If it all needs to look pretty good, we're going to send it to some artists. We also probably can have some students and kids test it out. We'll then also ask around the community, well, what do you know about these guys? I mean, we might check in with folks and see. There's another thing is, if we're recommending somebody, then we're recommending that somebody, some program, we're really saying, you know, this is a good program to work with. Well, if some people produce good material, but they're just like, they kick sand at you when you're in the sandbox, right? They treat you like crap, right? Well, that's a factor too. How well do they work with each other? That's one thing.
Right.
Now, let's take by contrast, if we're going to Haiti and the government of Haiti comes up with something, and it's official government Haiti, and at least it's not denier stuff. I mean, you know, it's doing its best. We're not going to be too much trying to judge whether it's good science, right? We're going to say, this is what Haiti's got, right? And we're going to put that up in that well. So
okay.
There, I think that's kind of that's kind of an understood thing. The international section, which we're talking about here, will often be, this is what they have, for good or bad.
Yeah.
That's the best they have. Okay.
Yeah, good.
So anyway, I'm not going to neither trying to stop questions nor forget what Mark wrote.
Any other questions?
I'm on the website. What is supposed to happen when you click on one of the words on the left-hand menu? Like if you click on careful avoiding cold fusion demos, the page just comes up again.
That's right. Okay. That's we were asked to come do this at a time that we have recently put up, thank you for catching that, we recently have put up the whole section on the mobile climate science labs. We've been doing them for years, but it hasn't been much on the web. So that's kind of a skeleton of where we're going. And that's a section, and actually this will segue well into Mark's thing if I've added this correctly. So sometimes when we have, that's an area where the specific pages within it are yet being developed, so we have a redirect coming back in. So absolutely, you've got a place where that page isn't fully developed, so in the meantime we're sending it back up to its home page.
Okay.
And yes, that's what's supposed to happen. It's like, well, what do you do in that situation? So. This actually, now if I answer that adequately, but that actually, here is part of it segueing, that particular button that you picked out is a very difficult subject for us, and this is the one that Mark is bringing up. It is so important to us, on the one hand, that education, you know, at least if we're trying to do our part in helping to spread good science, hands-on science education, that we're raising the bar, we're making sure it's taught well, we're doing things. And at the same time, not treating the point of view of, well, if somebody else has some problems, well, that's their problem. Because it's a problem for all of us, and, you know, we'd like to bring up problems. I mean, we'd like to help, but how do we do that? We want to do it in a way that is not embarrassing those organizations that do it, because it might be coming from very not bad ways that they're doing it. So we want to handle that, but yet we have to handle it. So that issue of the cold fusion is the thing that Mark is asking in a lot of ways, and we're trying a lot before we put that up to do a lot more checking around with people and trying to give them a chance to clean it up, have dialogue, make sure we have it all right.
So could you tell me what you're implying? I'm not really sure what you're implying by that phrase.
Okay. Right. So that's a place that one of the things we do when we do a cold fusion is if we're making a claim that doesn't hold up scientifically, okay, that's the idea of we're trying to do a thing that's a little bit vague at the moment, but it's bringing it up. And one of it is, okay, so here's a specific example. A class of demonstrations that is very highly prominently promoted. There's lots of variations. They're really taking off. They're being done, and being done by surprisingly, you know, many of the big science museums, the aquariums, including the Bay Area, are doing it. And some can be done okay, but for the most part, there's a real problem with it, and what people have to be aware of. So I don't know how much people have seen variations of this, but in basic terms, if we have one container of various types, open or closed, that has a high concentration of carbon dioxide, and another container is just air, and we're going to shine one or more incandescent lights into those containers, and then measure, does the carbon dioxide side get warmer than the air side? Okay. The demonstrations, typically what they're bringing up is that what we're about to demonstrate, if we see a higher degree, a higher temperature rise in the carbon dioxide side than the air side, then we have demonstrated the following, that visible light is leaving the incandescent light bulb If there's dirt or rocks at the bottom of the container, it's being absorbed, being readmitted as infrared, and the carbon dioxide is absorbing that. Then the carbon dioxide is getting warmer, and that's what we're seeing. So it's a thing. This is a demonstration of the greenhouse effect. That's not what's going on. There is a slight amount of that going on, but it's overall getting dominated by other factors. There's other things going on, and in the demonstration, we need to know the difference. There's many different things, and one of the things historically we've done is we've done those demonstrations as we've seen them written up, and taken them out to the public. We've done them for scientists, and we're able to see this has got some similarities to a cold fusion claim. This is not actually what we're demonstrating. You can demonstrate the greenhouse effect, and we want to encourage people to use more difficult but real demonstrations of the greenhouse effect. But it would be. It's already started to make some of the press in the UK, and that this has become so prominently, it's almost like plagiarized. Everybody's copying one another, and I think a lot of it appears on other websites, and it's got the earmarks that folks aren't even really trying it. They're just saying, well, I saw this on such and such website. We're going to promote it too. That's not actually what's going on. There's other things going on, which I don't want to take your time too much. We can go into the basics of what's going on. And this has been a process of asking a lot of scientists and checking in. It's also actually been a very interesting thing that in the process of really tearing apart what's happening and what's going on, we're discovering that a lot of the way in which we teach things by slides and so on like that are it's a fine line between simplification and accuracy, that in time we're going to need to upgrade those classic pictures of how light comes from the sun and comes up, because the more you start doing it by hands-on, the more you say, you know, it's not as simple as that, and that's not what it's really going on. It's more complicated, but it's also more interesting. It's fascinating. And it also answers the question of how do climate scientists know these things? That they're so complex. Well, we'll break it down and let you start doing it. Once you start playing with it, it's not so scary that even a 10-year-old can't be familiar with it. It's fun stuff. But if we teach it wrong, oh boy, could that come back and bite us? That could be such a mess.
Yeah. That's a great point.
This is Tamara again. On this one, your site for the mobile climate science lab themes, are you eventually going to post the labs here?
Yes. So on that is, this is, we work toward putting more things. We've had some things up on the web before. We're more building that. But this is our answer to on that. We have a skeleton right now. Our priority has been and remains to actually be doing this for hundreds of thousands of people in California for diverse communities. So we do it. We invite people to come with us and do things. We have some bigger issues like these ones to handle. As the more we put things up, the more we're in the position of having to say, look, these other demonstrations aren't so good. And that's not what we're about. We're not about trying to say, hey, oh, we're really good, and so-and-so isn't so good. That's not our message. We want
I know, but right now you have a lot of links that don't go to anything.
That's right. So that section is an example. That you're going to the part of that section where is an example where that's often, again, you're calling this in as we've developed that section. And as we develop things, we're putting in links. I mean, we're not a massively expensive website, right? We're trying to keep things cost down. So as we are developing a section that's yet not filled out, we'll put redirects and we'll come back up again. And I know that can be frustrating, but that's the way we try and handle it.
Okay.
Jen, this is Scott Carley again. My recommendation is probably just to remove the links so that it just looks a little different. It is frustrating for folks. Because then if they just happen not to get a page that has content, they'll basically just walk away from the site and may not come back to it for 6 months. That would be my concern.
Okay.
Either don't have the link there or just actually eliminate them, at least on the live site. It's very frustrating, I think, for folks who are thinking that, you know, you look at this and say, oh, there's so much material here, and then you start clicking around and you start wondering, is there anything here?
Mm-hmm.
That's a real danger.
Good. No, that's very important.
Yeah. It's just a, you know, it just mm-hmm. would make it a little, or even just a, you know, even just a comment that says, you know, we are filling out these sections. Please come back soon to mm-hmm. see more content, more links.
Good. And actually, if it sounds good to you, I might even lean toward that because, again, there's a thing of, as you're building a site, we're doing things with the budget we have. Is
yes.
Other sites will be a thing that they'll just completely redo themselves and then they'll come up, and those sites often cost one or two orders of magnitude more than our site.
Yes.
Yeah. So
we understand that.
Yes. This is under development. Then because that's easy to put up and then take right back down again. So,
But
you know, thank you for that feedback. We're looking for that feedback again. This is a fairly young part of our website. So we're looking at that point very well taken, and I think you're going to see that happen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. If there are any other questions, we are coming to the end of our hour. We appreciate your making this presentation, and it has been recorded. We'll be posting the audio along with the slides as soon as it comes in.
Great. What a great forum you have, and thank you for the great questions. I like questions. I love questions that put us on the toes and questions that we don't get asked too often. So.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, everybody.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
And thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you,
Bye.
Lily. Bye.